You know, at major law firms, we have to do unjust things and bully the weak as well. Because those who can afford attorneys with high commission fees like us are the rich and powerful.
Who has this cynical view of the law, and how will this affect the heart and mind of our dear Ouyang Wu?
I'm Joanna.
And I'm Sung Hee, and this is K-Drama Chat, where we will take our favorite Korean dramas, also known as K-dramas, and recap and analyze each episode. Today, we'll be discussing episode 12 of Extraordinary Attorney Woo, the hit K-drama on Netflix starring Park Eun-bin as Ouyang Woo, Kang Tae-ho as Lee Jun-ho, Ha Yun-kyung as Choi Soo-yeon, Ju Hyung-young as Dong Geun-ami, Kang Ki-young as Jung Myung-suk, and Ju Jung-hyuk as Kwon Min-woo. We'll also discuss the proper pronunciation of many Korean family names.
Let's recap episode 12, titled Yangtze River Dolphin.
A senior manager at the Mirae Life Insurance Company, Kim Hyun-jung, is presented with a difficult choice by the human resources manager. The company is undergoing restructuring, and so married employees are asked to voluntarily resign, with the rationale that they are more financially stable than single employees. If the wife doesn't resign, the husband will be placed on unpaid leave, which puts pressure on the wife to give up her job. Kim Hyun-jung is devastated after having devoted years of her life to the company and sacrificing her roles as mother and wife.
CEO Han drops by Attorney Jung's office on her way to visit one of their colleagues at the hospital. One of their former clients had attacked Attorney Park, even though their defense had shortened his prison sentence for murdering his father, and now he is on the run. CEO Han reassures Attorney Jung that she has increased the security in their building, but afterwards he is on edge at the sight of every suspicious figure.
Attorney Jung, together with his team, attends a meeting with Moon Jung-chul, the human resources director at Mirae Life Insurance, who has been sued by two of the female employees forced to resign from his company. Ouyang Woo does not see how the company's policy discriminates against women, but Choi Soo-yeon points out that it effectively puts the pressure on the wives to resign. Moon Jung-chul asks about the opposing attorney, Yoo Jae-suk. She is known for taking on human rights cases, which are often uphill battles with a low success rate. She is also known for being quite loud.
Outside the court building, Ryu Jae-suk and her two clients hold a vocal demonstration protesting the discriminatory policies of Mirae Life Insurance. Attorney Jung is concerned that this will influence the pre-trial hearing, but the judge, Ryu Myung-ha, instead is more interested in Ryu Jae-suk's family origin, which happens to be the same as his. But instead of capitalizing on their connection, Ryu Jae-suk takes offense that the judge asked about her father's name and not hers, implying that he might be biased in a sex discrimination case. Furthermore, she points out that she is of a more senior family generation than he is, though she won't hold that against him.
Ouyang Woo speaks with her father and expresses her difficulty with understanding context and tone in what people say. But he interrupts her by asking if she's seeing someone. To his surprise, she says no. He scolds her for kissing a guy that she's not even dating and demands that she bring him home to answer to him.
In court, attorney Ryu Jae-suk questions Moon Jung-chul about how his company's policies intentionally pressured women to resign. Then attorney Jung questions Choi Yeon-hee, one of the female employees of the company whose husband ended up resigning. She regarded the offer as generous since it included 13 months of severance pay and the opportunity to continue working as a contract employee. Kim Hyun-jung, one of the plaintiffs, protests that this is simply a means to turn female employees into second-class citizens. Upon further questioning by attorney Ryu, Choi Yeon-hee admits that her husband is quite ill.
After the court session, the two plaintiffs, Kim Hyun-jung and Lee Ji-young, approach Choi Yeon-hee, expressing their concern about her ill husband. The three of them embrace, giving each other comfort and understanding. As the Hanbada team leaves the courthouse, they are surprised by Lee Ji-young, who offers them bungeopang, a pastry snack. Ouyang Woo notices the tree logo on her keychain. While driving back to the office, Ouyang Woo notices the same tree logo on an ad on the taxi next to their car. At her request, Lee Jun-ho chases the taxi down to get a better look, and they see that the ad is for Himan Women's Hospital, a fertility clinic.
Kwon Min-mu ponders Tae-soo-mi's deal to hire him if he can get Woo Young-woo to quit Hanbada. He drops by Woo Young-woo's office, where he casually mentions the injustice that only the rich can afford representation by firms like Hanbada. In fact, it was Hanbada that advised Mir Life Insurance on their restructuring plan so they could discriminate against female employees. If the plaintiffs knew this, he says, they would have a chance of winning their lawsuit. Attorney Ryu Jae-suk doesn't have the resources to investigate as Hanbada does. He leaves the document Hanbada had written up for Mir Life Insurance for Woo Young-woo to read.
Woo Young-woo takes the document to Attorney Jung, distressed that Hanbada had taught Mir Life Insurance how to legally discriminate against its female employees. She also doesn't want to take advantage of the fact that Lee Ji-young took time off for fertility treatments. He disagrees with her that their job is not to make the world a better place. Their job is to defend their clients' interests. It's the judge's job to determine what is socially just, not theirs.
Woo Young-woo and Lee Jun-ho protest the captivity of dolphins in front of an aquarium. Woo Young-woo is troubled over what her true purpose is as an attorney. Lee Jun-ho reassures her that it is the large law firms like Hanbada and Tae-san that take on the most public interest cases. Whatever she decides, he will support her.
At the next court session, Woo Young-woo questions Lee Ji-young about her absences from work, forcing her to reveal that she was pursuing fertility treatments. Visibly uncomfortable, Woo Young-woo argues that resigning from her job was therefore to her benefit, since she was obviously planning to get pregnant. Ryu Jae-suk objects that this is irrelevant to the case, but she is overruled by the judge.
During the recess, Ryu Jae-suk approaches Woo Young-woo and suggests that she could work at a better place in Hanbada, such as with her, defending the rights of women instead of a corporation like Mir Life Insurance. Ryu Jae-suk goes on to explain that judges and prosecutors work to protect the law, but attorneys work to protect the people. Attorneys sit side by side with their clients to protect them as fellow human beings. But to do that, attorneys need to decide what is right and be true to themselves.
Kwon Min-woo sees Woo Young-woo talking with Ryu Jae-suk, which gives him an idea. While lurking around Woo Young-woo's office in the evening, Choi Soo-yeon tells him that she's left with Lee Jun-ho already, since they're seeing each other. Afterwards, he sneaks into Woo Young-woo's office and packs up a copy of the legal advice Hanbada had given Mir Life Insurance, together with Woo Young-woo's business card, to send anonymously to Attorney Ryu.
When Lee Jun-ho walks Woo Young-woo home, she tells him that her father saw them kissing. She's not going to introduce Lee Jun-ho to her father yet, since they've never said they're officially dating. Lee Jun-ho is offended. All the things they did together were her ideas, not things he wanted to do, such as protesting dolphin captivity or picking up garbage by the Han River. He did all these things because he likes her, but he's hurt that she thinks they're still not officially dating.
In court, Attorney Ryu announces that an anonymous informant has sent her new evidence that Mir Life Insurance purposely planned a discriminatory policy to fire female employees. Kwon Min-woo watches with anticipation, but is disappointed when she pulls out something else. The personal notebook of Moon Jong-chol, the Mir Life Insurance Human Resources Director. His notes reveal that he was given the order by his boss to force the wives to resign by threatening their husbands. Attorney Jung objects that this evidence was obtained illegally, but Woo Young-woo points out that this only applies to criminal proceedings, so it's up to the judge who allows it. Woo Young-woo sees the secret gesture between Kim Hyun-jung and someone in the audience, Choi Hyun-hee, the same woman who had resigned because of her sick husband. Choi Hyun-hee was the one who had taken the HR director's notebook from his office and sent it to Attorney Ryu.
A large protest takes place outside the Mir Life Insurance headquarters, protesting the unfair firing of female employees. Judge Ryu pronounces his verdict, dismissing the claims of the plaintiffs. The two plaintiffs, Kim Hyun-jun and Lee Ji-young, together with Attorney Ryu, put on a brave face in their disappointment. Outside the courtroom, they make a statement to the press that they fought a good fight and will continue to do so for equality in Korea.
Even though they were on opposing sides, Woo Young-woo and Choi Soo-yeon are invited to Attorney Ryu's after-trial party, On the way, Uyamu tells Choi Soo-yeon that Attorney Ryu is like a Yangtze River dolphin, which was declared extinct. There is no one like Attorney Ryu at Hanbada, and Uyamu hopes that she doesn't become extinct. At Attorney Ryu's office, they both see numerous and touching messages of support, even though she lost the trial. Attorney Ryu pulls Uyamu aside to return the papers detailing Hanbada's advice to Mirror Life Insurance. She didn't use it during the trial because she didn't want Uyamu to get into trouble. On the rooftop, they enjoy bibimbap together and recite poems. Inspired by Ryu Jae-suk's hopeful and generous words, Uyamu sees the vision of a dolphin swimming across the sky.
Seized by fear, Attorney Jung flees from a suspicious figure who seems to be following him. Safe in his office, he receives the text message from CEO Han that the vengeful client has been apprehended. He is racked by a fit of coughing and finds that he is coughing up blood.
Whew!
Ita the sang to the he!
Joe to the Atanana.
Peng ha.
Peng ha.
Listeners, if you haven't visited the blog, I hope that you will, and that you'll read the wonderful comments and insights from other listeners and even comment yourself. Please go to kdramachat.com. And let me tell you, episode 12.10 elicited a very lively discussion about whether or not Yang Jong-il, the young man who was accused of raping the woman with the disabilities, whether or not he deserved his sentence. And what I absolutely love is that there was a lot of back and forth about this topic. There were a lot of heartfelt emotions, a lot of disagreements, but there was also a lot of respect. So thank you to all of our listeners who listen and comment thoughtfully. You add so much to the deep discussions that we start on this podcast and that you continue on the blog.
We appreciate that the issues covered in these episodes are complicated and our listeners on the blog provide so many new insights. In addition, we don't always agree, but especially in this day and age, it is truly wonderful to have discussions where we can agree to disagree.
Absolutely. Hey, Sung-hee, we haven't done a geography lesson in a while. So here's one. In the last 7 days, we had 3 downloads from Parawa Pebas. Any idea where that might be? And listener, Sung-hee really doesn't know. It's hidden from the notes.
Well, that is a tough one. So I was racking my brains, and at first I was thinking Central Europe, but I think I'm going to guess South America.
That's pretty good. Sung-hee, Parawa Pebas, and I hope I'm pronouncing it properly, is located in the state of Pará in the northern region of Brazil. And it's known for being in the heart of the Brazilian Amazon and is closely associated with the Caralas National Forest and the large iron ore mines in the neighboring Sierra dos Carajas. So someone in the Amazon forest is listening to our podcast. Isn't that awesome?
Wow, that's really amazing.
I know.
And that was a total guess. I had no idea.
Good job.
Yeah, but I did come up with a whole continent. So that kind of increased my chances.
That's true.
I also have something I want to report on. Earlier this month, dozens of South Korean women who worked as sex workers have filed a lawsuit accusing the United States military of illegally promoting the sex trade for decades and locking them up to forcibly treat them for sexually transmitted disease.
Yeah, this just happened this month. I read about this and I read it with great dismay. Much has been written about the so-called comfort women who were forced into becoming sex slaves for Japanese soldiers during World War II. And remember, these women had been rounded up by Japanese soldiers from countries all over Asia, including Korea, the Philippines, and Thailand. We've actually talked about this in many previous seasons of K-Drama Chat, but most notably in season 6, when we discussed Gyeongsang Creature, which took place during World War II. Now, this particular lawsuit by the South Korean women is a first and is shocking because it involves the U.S. government. And honestly, what we're learning is that governments will resort to the most evil of activities in the name of war and tending to the so-called needs of their soldiers. Yuck, Sung-hee.
I know. Well, the fight led by these women who were victimized by governments, no less, whether Japan or the United States, is especially impressive when you consider that being victimized in such a way brought tremendous shame to them. So to stand up and speak out took enormous courage. And with respect to the comfort women, with the passage of time, their numbers from World War II are dwindling, as many of them are in advanced old age.
Yeah, there's not many of them left. Hey, as always, let's stop to appreciate the songs we heard during the recap. We heard 1-2-3 Youngwoo by Jo Byung-hyun and H by Ro Young-shim. Now, 1-2-3 is kind of quirky, while H is kind of melancholy. So interesting, you know, instrumentals again from the OST.
Yes, I really appreciate all the instrumentals in this series. They're really quite beautiful.
Yeah, and if you listen to the entire OST, there's some really quirky pieces. I'll see if I can fold them into the podcast. They're a little bit hard to work with because they're really quirky.
Yeah, and very energetic. So
yeah. All right. Sehi, what did you think of this episode?
Well, I thought this was an episode that showed Woo Young-woo being stretched to step out of her comfort zone. So first, professionally, she's being forced to take a closer look at what it means to be an attorney and serve her clients. And then also, she's learning that being in a relationship with Lee Jun-ho means that she needs to think about me and you, not just me, which is how she described being autistic.
You know, this episode made me gasp many times because of the political intrigue within Hanbada, but also the legal and the moral nuances of the case. I found myself outraged at the way the women were treated by Mirae Life Insurance. And the discussion between Attorney Jung and Woo Young-woo was jaw-dropping about, like, what the hell is your role as an attorney? This might be one of my favorite episodes in the entire series. And then, you know, I also love the character of Yoo Jae-suk, the opposing attorney in the case. And I love that actress. She has really, really wide range.
Well, let's start with the case. In the opening scene, a female employee, Kim Hyun-jung, meets with the human resources manager of Mirae Life. Mirae Life has just been acquired by a German company, so the company is restructuring. Now, this means they need to reduce headcount. So, in the case of employees where the husband and the wife both work for the company, the wives are being asked to resign and potentially come back as contractors. The rationale is that two-income families are more able to withstand the shock of a job loss. But here's the catch. If the wife doesn't resign, then the husband will be put on unpaid leave.
Wow. Well, first of all, the word restructuring is a euphemism for laying off or firing people. When a company says it's, quote, restructuring, it means that they're making significant changes to their organizational structure, their finances, or their operations to improve efficiency, profitability, or to adapt to new market conditions. Now, that's the official story. But if you ever read that a company's restructuring, the unofficial story is that they're going to reduce headcount by eliminating positions or firing people. Now, when I saw this scene, it made my blood boil. I mean, I can understand that sometimes companies have to reduce headcount. I get that. But to target women employees indiscriminately is basically saying it doesn't matter what your contribution to the company is. It's got to be less than your husband's. So you should be the one to resign in all cases.
Right. Well, I think it basically shows the underlying patriarchal attitudes in Korean society. The husband is supposed to be the breadwinner. The wife working is just extra. If anything, she's supposed to be at home taking care of the children and the household. So if the husband was the one to lose his job, that would be a greater blow to him. At least that's how they see it. And his parents would be ashamed of having an unemployed son while their daughter-in-law still worked to support the family. The HR manager asked the women if they should be getting in the way of their husbands' careers. Now, this also shows how there's probably a glass ceiling preventing women from advancing in the company. Now, the term glass ceiling was first mentioned by Marilyn Loden in 1978 to describe an invisible barrier women often face to professional advancement. The human resources manager's comment implies that it's the husband who has the better chance of getting ahead, so the wife should step back.
Wow, Sanghee, just wow. And to think that one of the women had been working for the company for many years and had been given awards for her superior work. Honestly, what a dumb business decision to ask the women to leave because they were married women despite their exceptional performance. Like, why get rid of the high-performing people? And remember when she told her husband and they were talking outside? Her husband was a total wuss. He didn't seem outraged by the actions of the company. He didn't even give her a hug. He was just worried. I mean, I get it. You're worried. Your livelihood is at stake. Your family's getting disrupted. But still, you got to stick up for your wife.
Well, it turns out that Mir Life Insurance is a Hanbada client. So Attorney Jung and his team are going to defend these policies. We find out later that Hanbada actually consulted with Mir Life on the restructuring. And Hanbada had come up with a policy to specifically stay out of trouble. Though obviously not well enough since they got sued anyway. Now, the wives were asked to leave, and if they didn't leave, their husbands would be put on unpaid leave. This whole thing is confusing, and even U Yung-Wu is confused and says it's not clear whether the policy discriminates against women or men. Now, I was wondering if it would have been more effective for the company to bring the couple in together and tell them that one of them will lose their jobs, and it's up to the two of them to decide which one. But would that be discriminating against married people versus single people? And what if they fired people who were married, but their spouse worked somewhere else? The whole thing is just so distasteful.
Sung-hee, how about eliminating the positions that aren't going to be needed or firing the people who are low performing, regardless of gender? That would just make too much sense, right? To me, the policy clearly discriminated against women, but I'm no attorney, so it will be interesting to see what our attorney listeners have to say about this. Please comment on the blog at kdramachat.com. Now, Choi Soo-yeon says that the policy might be ambiguous, but Korea is still a patriarchal society. If only one person can work, Korean society says it should be the man who gets the chance to work. So this is a combination of discrimination and culture at work in this case.
Well, I think Mir Life Insurance was thinking that the women would be of the same mindset and that their husbands' jobs would be more important, so they would step down without a fight.
And most of them did.
Yes, that's right. And once again, Hanbada is forced to do the distasteful work of looking into the backgrounds of the plaintiffs to pick apart their stories and find their flaws. But it turns out that the two women plaintiffs are exceptional employees. But one of them was taking a lot of time off, and it turns out that she was having fertility treatments. Now, this aspect of lawsuits is just so horrible. No matter what your position, the other side can see it as fair game to pick you apart and discredit you, even if it's over something completely irrelevant.
Yes, during the discussion, the Mir Life HR manager says that he's worried about the plaintiff's attorney. Now, her name is Yoo Jae-suk. Turns out she's got a reputation for taking on cases involving women, human rights, and labor. She doesn't have a successful track record, but she seems well-known and she's fierce. She's also well-known for being loud and organizing protests. And indeed, she organizes a protest in front of the courthouse, telling the women employees to not inform the company of their marital status and basically protesting that forced resignation is discrimination against women. Now, Sung-hee, I got to tell you, this is obviously many, many years ago, but when I first started working, I was told to never share anything about my marital status and to never even mention that I might want to start a family in the future. Because I was told that if you hinted that you would someday be married and be a mom in the future, it would affect your career because you would be given fewer opportunities. The question is why? Well, I mean, even just a few decades ago, the thinking was that companies shouldn't invest too much in women who were going to have children and then leave the workforce anyway, or that somehow they would be less committed to their jobs.
Well, my understanding is that in the United States, it's illegal for employers to even ask these questions.
It is illegal, but like, you know, in normal conversation, you might say, oh, by the way, I'm engaged, or something like that. And I was told, never mention any of that stuff.
Right. Well, certainly not in the job interview.
Certainly not, but even after you got the job.
Oh, like you talk about life at work. I mean, people talk about their lives. I mean, to completely keep it under wraps that you have any personal life whatsoever. I mean, I think that would be pretty hard, wouldn't it?
Yes, but I'll tell you, I think especially at the bigger companies, I mean, I worked at a big company. I worked at Ernst & Young, and you never talked about your personal life. Never.
Oh, all right. Well, I suppose it's not like that at my job. People talk about their personal lives all the time.
No, and certainly in my small company, I know everything.
Right.
Who's getting a dog? Who's engaged?
Well, on the other hand, however, I have to admit that if you're a small employer, it's very difficult when employees take extended leaves, whether it's for childbirth or other personal issues. Now, I was out for 6 months when I was pregnant with my daughter, first for risk of premature labor, and then including maternity leave afterwards. And I was only one of 9 or 10 physicians in my group, so that meant the rest had to cover for me, which is pretty significant since we cover the hospital 24/7. But I suppose on the other hand, you could also see that was a small period of time over the 25 years I have worked very hard for this department.
Yeah, it's definitely nuanced. Well, let's turn to the judge. The issue is the judge being Ryu Myung-ha, and this is brought up by U Yang-woo. She was worried that the opposing attorney, Ryu Hae-suk, might have the same family background as the judge. And indeed, during the pretrial hearing, the judge asks Ryu Hae-suk about her family origin. Turns out both of them are from the Pungsan Ryu family, which freaks out U Yang-woo and Choi Soo-yeon. And remember, in a previous case, the prosecutor had tried to ingratiate himself to the judge by saying that his family is from the same region, so they're practically family. Then the judge asks something curious. He asks, what generation name does your father use? Seung-hee, what is this all about? Generation names.
Yes. Well, this is certainly something very different from what we're used to in the United States. So Korean society, especially historically, was very clan-based. And this is reflected also in how the family name comes first in one's name. But beyond one's surname, people can identify as to which clan they belong to. Especially if the family name is a common one, then this is even more important. But within each clan, there is a sequence of generations that starts with the origin of the clan. Each generation has a generation name, one component of their given name. So the use of generation name actually derives from Chinese custom, and clans often have a prescribed list of generation names that each member of a generation shares across paternal cousins. Now, this may be used for all members of the generation, males and females, or sometimes only for the males. Since the list of generations' names is predetermined, which generation one belongs to can be figured out by your generation name, regardless of your age. So, as an example, my parents had friends whose family name was Ro, which was also my mother's maiden name. Their children all had the generation name J, which was the same as my mother's.
Okay, so tell us what your mother's full name is.
Jaeryang.
So Ro Jaeryang.
Ro Jaeryang was her full name.
And everybody in that generation was Ro J something.
Exactly.
Ah, that's part of why they share the names between siblings.
Yes, right. Though it's not always a generation name. Sometimes they share a syllable, but they share it because they're siblings. But oftentimes it is because it's a generation name.
Oh.
So even though my mother was one generation older, as in 20, 30 years older than her friend's children, she was the same clan generation as their children.
It just depends on like how old the moms were when they were having kids.
Well, you know, generations aren't always exactly spaced the same.
Right.
So you might have one branch of the family where the generation is older or younger than another.
Right.
And so this is what's happening with Yoo Jae-suk, who is saying that she is of the generation above the judge, Ryu Myung-ha, since the J generation is the one before the Ha generation. This is why she says that she really would be his aunt.
Oh, so somehow there is common knowledge of what the generation names are within the specific clans.
Oh, absolutely.
Ah.
Yes, it's very well known about which generation you belong to.
And this kind of vibes with the hierarchical nature. And so you're always thinking about, like, which clan are you from? Which generation? And where is this clan from? I remember in Mr. Queen, we were always talking about the Andong Kim clan, not to be confused with the other Kim clans.
Right, right. And so that's why when you say your family name, like in English, we just naturally say last name because in English, your family name comes last. So for us, family name, last name is synonymous. But in Korea, and actually a lot of Asia, your family name comes first.
Right.
So you can't call it your last name in Asia. It's your family name.
Right. Huh. Okay. That's very interesting.
So the other thing about the names, just to mention, that you'll notice that in court, Yoo Jae-suk, when she addresses the judge, sometimes she actually says his whole name, while everyone else just calls him judge.
Okay, so hang on, let me ask you a question. Is she saying his name and then judge?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And then followed by Nim.
Right, where everybody else was just saying judge.
Right.
Ah.
So it's like she's emphasizing how she is one generation above him.
And then in the cinematography, there's emphasis on her name tag, which the judge is looking at as if he's like remembering that she's a generation above him.
That's right. It's like she's putting him in his place every time she says his name.
Well, attorney Ryu Hae-suk goes on a bit of a tirade against the judge. She asks the judge why he's asking about the generation name. And the judge says, well, daughters don't usually use a generation name, which is why he's asking about her father's generation name. Now, her strategy here was really odd. She could have played the family card to get on the judge's good side, but she almost shames him for asking about her father. And she says, hey, daughters usually marry, right? And then their father's family line don't continue. That's why you're asking about my father's family name. She then connects this logic to the case at hand, which is about sex discrimination and the patriarchal attitude of mere life. And she says that she's worried that the judge will not be able to see this case clearly. What did you think of this combative attitude that she had toward the judge? It was very interesting.
Yeah, she's a very interesting character. So I think sometimes her principles outweigh her sense of using her advantage. It's like she acknowledges to everyone that she has an advantage with the judge being of the same Ryu family clan, but she's not going to take advantage of it. It's like she's saying to everyone, look, I'm holding this card, but I'm not going to use it. So is she holding the moral high ground that she's not going to take this advantage? And so she's shaming everyone that she's more principled than they are? Or is she just naive and just not playing the game?
I actually thought that she was being very clever, because I think she was basically putting him on notice that if he acted in a way that projected a discriminatory attitude or a patriarchal attitude, she was going to call him on it. So the judge was going to have to be on his very best behavior, because you actually see it a couple of times where he's going to say something, looks at the name tag, and sort of checks himself. And I think that's why he ultimately said it didn't matter that the protests happened outside the courthouse. Because remember, she said, now, are you going to have a terrible, like, you know, biased attitude? And he was like, oh, no. And then when Attorney Jung said, what about this protest? He's like, it's fine. I won't be, you know, influenced by it.
Well, this was a tough case. During the hearing, the human resources manager admitted to saying all those terrible things to the women. In the United States, I think the case would have been decided based on those awful statements expressed by the human resources manager about when a husband loses his job, he's jobless. But when a wife loses her job, she's still just a housewife.
Wow.
Those words were damning. And then it was very clever of Hanbada to have a female witness, a mere life employee, whose husband resigned. It's like she was the opposite example. And she expressed that, of course, it's difficult during a restructuring, but this lawsuit is just making things worse when everyone is already exhausted. It's like she's blaming the plaintiffs for making things more difficult.
You know, what I don't love is all the digging into people's personal lives that the attorneys have to do or decide to do to litigate these cases. The woman who was the witness for Hanbada turned out to have a husband who has colon cancer, so Ryu Jae-suk argued that it made sense for him to resign. And the Hanbada team figured out that one of the female plaintiffs had been taking off a lot of time because she was going through fertility treatment. And remember, Attorney Jung said, find everything you can about these women.
Yes. And sadly, this is probably one of the main reasons that people hate being called into court. Because it's not just about the issue at hand. It's about having your life being picked apart under a microscope and your name dragged through the mud. Well, once again, how they figured this out is through the watchful eye of Woo Young-woo. She caught sight of this charm on one of the plaintiff's handbags. It has a logo with a very distinctive tree. And then when the attorneys are in the car driven by Lee Jun-ho, Woo Young-woo catches a sight of a taxi bearing the very same logo. So she asks Lee Jun-ho to follow the car so they can find out what company that logo stands for. And so Through some very heroic driving, Lee Jin-ho catches up with the taxi, and they realize that the logo is for Himang Women's Hospital, a hospital that specializes in fertility treatment.
In court, Woo Young-woo is basically making the case that Ms. Lee was going through fertility treatments, so didn't it make sense for her to resign and get the severance so she could focus on the pregnancy and the baby? And this line of reasoning didn't make any sense to me, because if this was all true, why is Ms. Lee now suing the company? And by the way, you can tell that Woo Young-woo is extremely uncomfortable with this line of questioning. She would stop, she would pause, you could tell that she was kind of at war with herself. Attorney Jung knew that questioning the witness this way would be extremely distasteful, and he ordered Woo Young-woo to do it, or he would do it himself.
Yes, you could tell, because she was just wincing and grimacing every time she had to proceed with that interrogation.
Right, and at one point, Choi Soo-yeon had to step in.
Yes. Well, Lee Ji-young states that even if she did get pregnant, she had every intention of staying at her job. Quitting because of pregnancy and children is just one more way that women end up marginalized in the workforce. And the extreme difficulty in combining motherhood with career is one reason that women often choose to either not have children or to have fewer children than they would have liked in Korea, but also even here in the United States. Well, in the end, Ryu Jae-suk submitted as evidence the notebook of the human resources manager. Now, we'll talk about this more later. But notice the extreme anticipation on Kwon Min-woo's face as she pulls out the evidence from the manila envelope.
Right.
She said that this notebook was submitted to her by an anonymous informant. This informant turned out to be the witness that Han Bada had brought in, the woman whose husband had quit and who had colon cancer. Now, it turns out that Moon Jong-chol, the human resources manager, had a habit of taking notes during his calls. And during the last year, he had a conversation with the Mir Life executive director that showed that the company wanted the wives to resign, and if they didn't, they would penalize the husbands. And this was all documented in the notebook. He was totally caught red-handed.
Yeah, it looked really bad for Mir Life, but when Judge Ryu finally rendered his decision, he dismissed the case by the two women. He said that since the policy penalized both the wives and the husbands, it was not discriminatory, and he dismissed the case. And furthermore, he said the women had resigned voluntarily. So the case was dismissed, and all the legal fees would be paid for by the plaintiffs. Wow, Sung-hee, since Han Bada is a really big law firm, what happens to these two women? Are they now saddled with paying for the fees charged by Han Bada to Mir Life in addition to the fees charged by Attorney Ryu? This was a shocking decision by the judge, because it felt like in the court of public opinion, the women won, but in the courtroom, they lost.
Yeah, I thought it was astounding that even with the evidence of the human resources director's notebook, that the judge found in favor of Mir Life Insurance. And this was another case where he's using his judgment of the presumed preferred social order to make his decision. I think the letter of the law, especially as advised previously by Han Bada, where the company had repercussions for both husband and wife, made it look like it was not discriminatory. But we all know that the spirit of the policy was clearly biased against the women.
Yeah, I think it had to do with the fact that they were saying that the policy discriminated against women, but the judge said, actually, it was equally bad for both the husbands and the wives, so it was not discriminatory, so he had to throw it out.
Right.
Well, Mir Life might have won the case, but nobody seems happy. Not HR manager Moon, not attorney Jung, and not Woo Young-woo. When manager Moon told attorney Jung that he will probably be fired soon, he asked if Han Bada gave Mir another consultation on how to fire him. Man, that had to suck for attorney Jung. And remember, Attorney Jung was already on edge because he thought that an attacker was after him. And he knew that his firm ultimately was helping the company fire a whole lot of people. He was strung out. He hadn't been sleeping. He was eating poorly. This was a terrible, terrible case for Attorney Jung and a bad situation for him.
Yes. Well, HR manager Moon said he fired 100 people. So how could he hope for a positive outcome for himself? And he called it karma. So even though he was the so-called bad guy, the one who actually fired all these women, he was just, in the end, a cog in the machine. It's really the company who dictated the policy that is at fault. And after firing all these people, he can see that there is a karmic justice in his also losing his job. The company can say that he didn't carry out the restructuring smoothly, but instead got the company involved in a very public lawsuit, which had to hurt their public image.
So basically, he was the fall guy or the scapegoat.
Oh, completely.
And when he gets fired, people can say, oh, look, he was the one who fired all those women. And so, you know, good for Amir for firing him also. So there's justice in the world, but is there really justice?
Right. And they can say, oh, well, they fired him too, and he was a man.
Right, right. Well, Attorney Yu might have lost the case, but she was still celebrating. She still had hope. And she was even gracious toward Uyang-woo and Choi Soo-yeon. She even invited them to the after party. Sang-hee, it makes me think of all the struggles, the protests, the legal cases, and the demonstrations that Americans took part in for women's voting rights, for voting rights, for non-white people, all those civil rights cases. I mean, there were so many lawsuits that were lost, and yet they paved the way for wins later on.
Yes, it was really wonderful when Uyang-woo compares Attorney Yu to the Yangtze River dolphin, which is a rare dolphin that had adapted to live in the fresh water of the Yangtze River, but has gone extinct. Attorney Yu is an attorney who would never be found at a place like Hanbada, and she hoped that attorneys like her would never go extinct. I think this refers to how she is the rare attorney who takes on fights to win justice for the underserved. But in addition, Attorney Ryu Jae-suk has a grace and generosity that is completely new and refreshing. Her approach is not adversarial. She doesn't demonize her opponents. And if anything, she invites Uyang-woo and Choi Soo-yeon, the attorneys of the other side, to her after-trial party. And I think this is also reflected in how her clients, the two women, approached that other woman who testified against them. They came to her with love and compassion, expressing sympathy for her husband's illness. And I think this is how she was inspired to take that notebook from the HR director's office.
Those two women even gave bungeopang to the Hanbada attorneys, remember?
Yes, I know. They had such generosity.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to the evil Kwon Min-woo. Now, remember, Tae Soo-mi had given him the challenge of getting Uyang-woo to quit or get fired. Now, somehow, he figured out that Hanbada provided guidance to Mir Life on the restructuring. And I think he got a hint of this during the first meeting when the HR manager met with Attorney Jung, and Attorney Jung seemed uncomfortable when Choi Soo-yeon asked if the company anticipated problems when they developed the policies. He was just like, well, we knew that there were going to be some problems. Kwon Min-woo gets a copy of the legal memo that Hanbada created for Mir Life, and he shares it with Uyang-woo. He says it was Hanbada that came up with the policy that ultimately allowed the company to get rid of 100 female employees and do it without getting in trouble. He knows this is a tough case for Uyang-woo and Choi Soo-yeon. So I'm thinking that he's thinking he can get her to quit by pointing out the ethical and moral dilemmas that attorneys face, especially at a company like Hanbada, which tends to represent companies like Mir. And he says, the people and companies that can afford our high commission fees are the rich and powerful, and we help them bully the weak. Wow.
Yes, so maybe this was an effort to demoralize Uyang-woo so that she wouldn't want to continue at Hanbada. But also, all of this upsets Uyang-woo, so she immediately goes to see Attorney Jung. She wants to know if he knew that Hanbada helped Mir Life restructure and avoid legal issues. And of course, Attorney Jung knew. So now, Uyang-woo says, if they win this case, we'll be playing a part in legalizing the firing of female employees first. And in a shameful way, by taking issue with the fact that one of the plaintiffs, E.G. Young, was being treated for infertility. She wants to know how all of this is making the world a better place. But Attorney Jung says, who told you that attorneys contribute to making the world a better place? He says, what an attorney does is defend. He says it's our job as attorneys to protect the client's rights and do our best to prevent the client's losses. Our legal expertise is supposed to be used for that, not to make the world a better place. I was shocked to hear these words coming out of his mouth.
Oh my God, this scene made me gasp. Because, you know, I think many of us believe that the law is there to protect us and make the world a better place. And lawyers are supposed to kind of make this happen. But think about what Kwan Min-woo said. The people and companies who can afford the fees of big firms are the rich and powerful. And we see it all the time. It's often the case that the more resources you can throw at a case, the more likely you are to win. Because you can do more research, you can find more witnesses, you can prep your witnesses better, you have better technology, etc., etc. Sung-hee, remember a few episodes ago, I was talking about my sister's divorce, and her attorney said, it's not about who's right or wrong, it's about who has better evidence. And, you know, we keep also talking about how as an attorney, your job is to protect your client, even when your client is a bastard or an evil company.
Well, Attorney Jung actually gets quite angry with Uyeong-woo. So I was wondering if she was set up by Kwan Min-woo to have this confrontation with Attorney Jung. But looking at this more closely, I'm thinking that the reason Attorney Jung said this and got so angry was because he's stuck in the situation himself. When Hanbada advised Mirror Life earlier, maybe he didn't foresee exactly how this would play out. And I think that maybe he's suffering from cognitive dissonance and having to defend a client's action when he doesn't truly believe in it himself. But he can't go against Hanbada's earlier official opinion. But poor Uyeong-woo, she's caught trying to decipher Attorney Jung's reaction. And by process of deduction, she's coming to the conclusion that he's angry.
Well, remember when Lee Jun-ho and Uyeong-woo are protesting at the aquarium? And she's kind of wondering about, you know, what the role of attorneys are. Lee Jun-ho says, I've seen lots of attorneys at Hanbada ask themselves this question. And some attorneys, like Attorney Jung, have kind of made peace with it. So we're seeing that Attorney Jung, he's been there a long time. He's figured out how to make peace with it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's happy with it all the time.
That's right.
We also see that he's exhausted and on edge himself because he's been losing sleep and peace because the guy who attacked one of the Hanbada attorneys is on the loose. No wonder he lashed out at Uyeong-woo. So Kwan Min-woo is planting seeds of doubt in Uyeong-woo's mind about her profession and her job at a big and powerful law firm. Now, the other person who's doing this is attorney Ryu Jae-suk. Ryu Jae-suk can tell that Uyeong-woo is unhappy with the way the case is unfolding, and she can tell that Uyeong-woo has a brilliant legal mind. So she offers Uyeong-woo a job, the second person to do so. She says to Uyeong-woo, isn't it cooler to stand on the side of brave women, laborers, instead of defending a client like Mirror Life? She asks this because she saw Uyeong-woo's discomfort at defending Mirror Life and while questioning Miss Lee.
Well, Uyeong-woo tries to defend herself and Hanbada by quoting Attorney Jung about how it's the job of the attorney to defend.
She doesn't seem convinced by it, by the way, when she's saying that.
Yes, no. I mean, she's trying to convince herself.
Right, exactly.
Ryu Jae-suk's response is, but attorneys are humans. They are different from judges and prosecutors. We all work in the legal field, but while judges and prosecutors work to protect the law, attorneys work to protect the people. Each case might just be work for a judge or a prosecutor, but it's different for an attorney. We sit next to the client as someone they chose for protection and as fellow humans. These were beautiful words and such powerful commentary on the role of an attorney. But in a way, it's interesting because she's kind of saying the same thing as Attorney Jung, that the role of the attorney is to protect their client. But the difference is in who she decides to defend. And I think it comes down to what Kwan Min-woo actually said, that it's the rich and powerful who could afford to be defended by Hanbada, while Attorney Ryu defends the underserved, who can't afford to pay the high fees and with few resources at her disposal.
I thought the language in this episode was exceptionally beautiful and thought-provoking. We have conflicting views of an attorney's job by Attorney Jung and Attorney Ryu, and this is adding to Uyeong-woo's confusion. Just what is her role as an attorney, and where does she belong? She went to work at Hanbada, the only place that gave her a job. Remember, everybody else turned her down. And then Taesan, the most powerful law firm in the country, offered her a job. And now a human rights and labor attorney who works in a tiny, shabby office has offered her a job as well. So she's probably thinking, where do I belong? And what's my role as an attorney?
Yes, that's right. I mean, this is a whole journey for her.
Yeah.
Well, another person trying to help Uyeong-woo think about all this is Lee Jun-ho. He says that he's seen, as you said before, other attorneys at Hanbada grapple with these legal and ethical issues. And some attorneys, like Attorney Jung, have found their answers, while others never did, and some ultimately left the firm. But he also reminds her that Hanbada and Taesan take on the largest number of public interest cases. So it's not always just about the money.
You know, I got curious about these public interest cases. Now, in the U.S., there are no federal laws about law firms doing public interest or pro bono work. And pro bono, by the way, means the client doesn't pay any fees. However, the American Bar Association recommends that every attorney do 50 hours of pro bono work a year. This is not a requirement, just a recommendation. You know, it's probably good for the attorneys. It's good for the profession. And you also have to believe that doing pro bono work is good for the reputation of a law firm and probably good for the souls of some of these attorneys.
Yeah. We'll hear from extraordinary attorney Malcolm about the soul of attorneys.
And other attorneys, like attorney Christine, who's a big listener of the podcast.
Well, I have some information about the law in South Korea about all of this. In South Korea, lawyers are required by law to fulfill a minimum of 30 pro bono hours per year. The local bar associations can reduce this to 20 hours under special circumstances. This mandatory requirement was established in 2000 by the Attorney at Law Act and the Korean Bar Association rules. Lawyers who cannot meet this requirement for a valid reason may contribute to a designated pro bono fund or pay a fine. So we put a link in the show notes to a PDF from a law firm explaining all of this.
The evil Kwon Min-woo is proceeding with his evil plan to get Uyeong-woo to quit or get fired. When he sees Uyeong-woo talking to Attorney Yu, he tells Attorney Jung and Choi Soo-yeon, you know, why is she talking to the other attorney, ostensibly to put doubt in their minds and make them wonder why the two were talking. But his evilness goes further. He takes the memo that Hanbada had written for Mirror Life about the restructuring and mails it to Attorney Yu with Uyeong-woo's business cards. So now it looks like Uyeong-woo mailed the memo to the opposing attorney. I mean, my God, if discovered, this probably would have been grounds to fire Uyeong-woo. So he's actively trying to get her fired.
Yes. So this is why, when Attorney Yu was pulling out the new evidence from the manila envelope, he was so eager to see it. He was expecting that she was using the memo he sent with Uyeong-woo's business card. But we find out later that Attorney Yu had received the memo but opted to not use it in court because she knew that having the memo would cause a problem for Uyeong-woo, and that's not how she operates. In addition, she had her own method of obtaining evidence, as we discussed earlier, because the other female employee gave her the HR manager's notebook. So Attorney Yu is going to win on her own terms, not with the assistance of some guilt-ridden attorney, and not by ruining the career of another woman. So in the end, Kwon Min-woo's evil plan was foiled.
Yes. And now Uyeong-woo knows that somebody at Hanbada is out to get her. It's not just gossip anymore, because mailing the memo to Attorney Yu was an act of deception and disloyalty. And she's no dummy. I'm sure she has an idea about who mailed the memo. At least I hope she has an idea.
Yes, I would hope so too. Well, let's turn to Uyeong-woo and her father. So we see her at home. She's chatting with her father and she's eating fruit. You notice that they eat a lot of fruit.
Yes.
They don't seem to eat a lot of candy, but we do see fruit quite a bit.
Unless it's Kopiko candy.
Oh, that's true. And I didn't think it's a common custom to have fruit as a dessert, because we did that when I was growing up. And I think it's apparently a Korean mom skill to be good at peeling apples and cutting them up to serve. Though in this case, it must have been Woo Kwang-ho who was doing this. Now, Uyeong-woo says to her father that she doesn't like the word context. It's as difficult as the word tone. and she's expressing difficulty in reading the room, reading people's unspoken intentions, and understanding how tone and context affects what's being said. This is something that's really hard for her as an autistic person.
It sounds like she's saying, I'm really bad at Nunchi.
Basically.
Because she has difficulty seeing the underlying context and recognizing tone. I mean, isn't that the essence of Nunchi? So in a country where a lot is left unsaid and hierarchy determines a whole lot, being autistic and being less able to read the room is a huge disadvantage.
Yeah, I'm thinking that she was probably talking about her conversation with Attorney Jung, which she had to kind of figure out exactly what he was feeling.
Well, totally. She's so terrible at reading people's emotions that when she was talking to Attorney Jung, she said, are you angry?
I know, right?
She couldn't tell, remember?
She starts pointing out all the little details that might indicate.
Right, your cheekbones, your eyes. Right. By the way, do you remember in episode one, we saw a board in Uyangu's bedroom that showed photos of her father with different expressions on his face, and each photo was labeled with an emotion. So the photos were probably meant to educate Uyangu about what facial expressions mean because she's so bad at interpreting emotion. I mean, that was quite shocking when she said, are you angry? And I was like, oh my God, like he's got steam coming out of his ears.
Right. And exactly the wrong question to ask someone who's angry.
Right.
So didn't we see something very similar to that in It's Okay to Not Be Okay with Moon Sun-tae?
Oh my God, we did. Really good catch.
All right.
Then Woo Kwang-ho asks Uyangu if she's in a relationship. Now, he, of course, thinks this because he witnessed his daughter kissing some guy on the street in front of their house. Imagine his shock when she says no. And he says, I love this. I didn't think you had it in you. It's like you're in a Hollywood movie doing things the American way. And have you noticed these digs against Americans every once in a while in these shows?
Yes, I kind of think it's a common attitude. I think once I made my mother really mad when I told her I was American. Boy, she did not like that.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about how Uyangu is very literal. The fact that she and Lee Jun-ho have not explicitly said that they're in a relationship, in her mind, means that they're not in a relationship, at least not yet. So he, of course, is shocked and dismayed by this. Why else would he spend his free time protesting in front of aquariums, for example?
Sung-hee, you probably don't remember this, but in college, it was called the DTRT. Do you remember this?
No.
The Defining the Relationship talk?
Oh, yes, that's right.
You remember the DTRT?
Oh, I never heard the acronym, but yes, I remember the idea.
So it's like you start dating someone and then it's like, well, have you had the DTRT? Are you dating? Are you not?
Oh, right. I remember we need to talk about the relationship.
Right, exactly. Well, this was a no-win situation for Lee Jun-ho. He was not going to win that discussion. When he said, why would I spend my free time protesting? Uyangu said, well, don't you agree that dolphins shouldn't be in aquariums?
Right.
And if he says, well, I only did that because of you, my dear Uyangu, she'll accuse him of not being sincere. When he says it's not fun to protest, she looks at him like he's a Martian. Not fun? How is that possible that it's not fun to protest? So poor Lee Jun-ho. By the way, these dates don't sound fun, Sung-hee. They sound like service projects.
Well, yeah.
Picking up garbage and protesting.
Right. Well, I think it's because to Uyangu, it's completely logical for them to do all these activities together, at least from her point of view. Because again, she doesn't understand that other people may have different ideas and preferences. Why would they when what she thinks makes so much sense to her?
Yeah, but what's funny is remember when she said, I like you and I researched all these fun things to do on dates? What kind of research was she doing that a fun thing to do on a date is picking up garbage? Like, what blog post was that?
That's true. But then she might have just picked up activities and then because she thought they were interesting, made them into a list.
Right. Well, Lee Jun-ho is further shocked when she says her father saw them kissing and wants to meet him, but she doesn't want him to. Again, this is because she doesn't know yet if they're dating, and this further adds to his shock, because in his mind, they are dating, and of course, it's probably time for him to meet her father.
Well, maybe he's finally realizing what he signed up for. Last week, we wondered if he would get tired of having to explain everything to Uyongwoo. Now I think their relationship is definitely suffering growing pains. Uyongwoo is brilliant, especially legally, but she's utterly clueless when it comes to matters of the heart. He's going to have to spell everything out for her. And as much as it's important to think about how the one you love thinks and feels, I think sometimes you also want the one you love to think about how you feel as well. And that a relationship should be a two-way street.
Oh my God, 100%. You want your loved one to think about how you feel. By the way, did you notice that Taesumi's offer to have Uyongwoo work at the Boston office still has not been discussed by her father? So when's he going to break the news to her or give her the opportunity? And by the way, extraordinary attorney Malcolm on the blog reminded us that Uyongwoo cannot practice law in the U.S. because she's not passed the bar there. Tiny little detail and obstacle to her working in the U.S. U.S. law is very different from Korean law.
Well, I'm trying to think creatively here. Maybe she could work as a consultant advising U.S. lawyers on Korean law and issues. I'm just trying to think of a way that this idea might make some sense.
You're right. She might be consulting on how to do business in Korea, for example. Well, let's turn to Attorney Jung. He's not doing too well in this episode. He's clearly overworked. He's spending too much time at the office and he's eating poorly. He's having a burger for breakfast, remember?
Oh, I know. It's awful.
And he says, I didn't have time for a proper breakfast. And I thought, oh, okay. What is a proper breakfast? Probably something healthy with all the banchan. I don't know. But anyway, CEO Han finds him in his office to let him know that she's about to visit one of their colleagues in the hospital. So it turns out that Park Hak-soo had been attacked by someone that he and Attorney Jung had defended many years earlier. And CEO Han says that the man had only gotten an 8-year sentence thanks to the work of Attorney Jung and Attorney Park. So anyway, we don't know why. I guess the man has now been let out of jail. He's on the loose and he just attacked Attorney Park.
Well, poor Attorney Jung. He's already stressed out and now every shadow is spooking him. That maintenance man in the black hoodie and the mask is totally freaking him out. And I don't blame him because this guy did look very suspicious. But thank goodness they found that guy and now he can relax. But he's not looking good at all in this episode. And then, just when he gets the reassuring news that this vengeful client has been caught, he has this terrible coughing fit and he ends up coughing blood. This is definitely not a good sign.
Okay, Sung-hee, Dr. Lee, why do you cough up blood? I'm thinking TB.
Or lung cancer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's lots of reasons to cough up blood, right?
Right. Or you could have something going on in your throat.
Oh, okay.
Or it could be an ulcer.
But in any case, it's not good.
It's not good.
Okay. Well, this episode was interesting in that we learn a little bit more about Attorney Jung. He's not just Uyongwoo's senior attorney. We see him stressed out, he's struggling, he's getting angry, and he's being very human.
You know, I think that when you're a junior employee, you look up at your seniors and you think that since they've made it, their lives must be easier. But I think each level has its own challenges. And as a senior attorney, he probably doesn't have the struggles that his junior associates have, but he might have greater and more significant responsibilities and issues.
Oh, 100%. I mean, think about the position that he was in when attorney Uyongwoo said, did you know that Hanbada developed this policy of restructuring? And he said, of course I knew.
Yes.
That was awkward.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some K-drama elements. What do we got?
Well, we had a fair amount of food. Uyongwoo eats fruit while she's talking to her dad. And we see this a lot where food is cut up and eaten with a fork.
And it's cut in a very specific manner. My husband cuts up apples that way. And I remember a Japanese friend came over and said, oh my God, my mom cuts up fruit this way.
Oh, and as did my mom.
There you go.
Yes, that's right. How else would you cut up apples? The two women plaintiffs give bungeopang to the Hanbada attorneys. Now, bungeopang is a fish-shaped pastry that's filled with a sweet bean paste. The name comes from the word bungo, which is the word for the fish, carp, and bang, which means bread.
Because it looks like a fish, right?
Right. It's shaped like a fish.
Yeah.
They actually cook it in some kind of like a waffle iron, a fish-shaped waffle iron.
Yeah, they have them in Japan too.
Oh, right. And I think it actually came from Japan.
Mm.
And then Attorney Yu invites not only her clients, but also Uyemu and Che Suyan to her rooftop to have bibimbap, which is a very common dish made of rice with a variety of vegetables, some meat, topped with a fried egg, and mixed with gochujang, a red pepper sauce. Very tasty.
Seung-hee, I love bibimbap. We have it a lot. My husband loves it. And when you make it in the sizzling clay pot, oh, it's delicious.
Yes, it's a very, very popular dish. I think it's probably number one or one of the top entrees in a Korean restaurant.
Yeah.
All right. We had playing at an arcade. So Uyemu and Lee Jun-ho spend one of their dates at an arcade, but spend the entire time playing this matching game where Uyemu wins every time before Lee Jun-ho has a chance to play.
Yeah, you don't want to be playing those games with a brilliant person.
No, right. Poor guy, he hardly even gets a chance at the game.
And we have sink to the ground with great emotion. When Kim Hyun-jung is talking to her husband about the restructuring, she sinks to the ground. And I thought, wow, if I tried to do that in heels, I don't know that I'd be able to get up these days.
Yeah, I don't think my knees would take it. All right, we had abrupt lane change while driving. When Uyemu asks Lee Jun-ho to follow that taxi with a distinctive logo so she can find out what it is, Lee Jun-ho does what he has to do. He makes an abrupt lane change, speeds up, and gets it done for Uyemu.
That's right. Well, and then we had poetry. Attorney Ryu Jae-suk reads poetry during the after party.
Yes, and that was lovely.
Yeah. Hey, did you have a favorite line? I had so many. We talked about, you know, when Attorney Jung said, who told you that attorneys contribute to making the world a better place? That was some monologue. And then I also loved it when Woo Kwang-ho said, I didn't think you had it in you. It's like you're in a Hollywood movie doing things the American way. And then that line that we opened with by Kwan Min-woo, where he says, you know, at major law firms, we have to do unjust things and bully the weak as well. Because those who can afford attorneys with high commission fees like us are the rich and powerful. And I think that line really encapsulates the episode.
Mm. Well, I like the poem that Attorney Ryu Jae-suk recites at the end. She says, because I feared becoming a lonely lump of ashes after loving others with my whole being, I haven't become coal for anyone. When I think about it, life is to shatter myself into pieces.
What do you think that means?
Oh, I thought it was such a beautiful idea.
It is.
I think it's that you spend yourself and you give all of yourself for the love and the benefit of others.
Hmm.
And it actually made me think of, I think it's a line from the Bible, where I think Jesus says, those who want to save their lives will lose it, but those who lose their lives will save it.
Hmm.
It's like, you have to give everything of yourself, and that is your ultimate purpose and the greatest good.
Yeah, it's interesting. The line says, life is to shatter myself into pieces. And shatter is an interesting verb because you're destroying yourself.
That's right. And coal, it burns and then it's consumed.
Right.
But it does so for the heat, for the warmth that it provides life to other people.
Hmm. Hey, so where are we at the end of the episode?
Well, Yoo Jae-suk and her two clients have lost their case, but in spite of this, they remain hopeful and energized. Uyemu is grappling with what it means to be an attorney, being presented with differing ideas by Attorney Jung and Attorney Ryu. Kwan Min-woo, in spite of his efforts, has not succeeded in jeopardizing Uyemu's position at Hanbada. The relationship between Uyemu and Lee Jun-ho has hit a few bumps in the road over misunderstanding over what they mean to each other. Attorney Jung is at a breaking point, both mentally and physically.
I thought this was a fantastic episode. And here we are at the end of the episode, and we have two characters in danger for very different reasons, Uyemu and Attorney Jung. Uyemu now has different options for her future employment. What will she do? And Attorney Jung, like, what's happening to him? He's like falling apart. Sanghee, before we go, I would like to talk about names and pronunciations of names. And I'll tell you why. I learned recently that my martial arts master, who's been my martial arts master for 13 years, I learned that his name is not Yun, but Yun. And his Romanized spelling is Yun, Y-U-N. So everyone in the studio calls him Master Yun. But I recently had the chance to see his name spelled out in Korean and realized with a shock that his name is more like Yun, Y-E-O-N. I was like, oh my God, Master Yun, I still call him that. I was like, it's not Yun, it's Yun. And he just laughed, of course, but I felt like such a dunce. And he said, well, hadn't you seen it before? And I was like, no, I don't look close at your belt. Plus his like belt is all tattered. And it was way up on one of his belts framed above his desk. So I thought, wow, the romanization is misleading. And this just kind of reminded me about how so many Korean names, depending on how they're romanized, kind of throw you off in terms of how they're pronounced. So maybe we could talk about some common names and how the English pronunciation could be very different and sometimes misleading.
Yes. Well, I think one thing that's confusing is that the system for romanization has changed over time. Maybe when he wrote his name in English, maybe Yun made sense to be spelled Y-U-N.
Right.
But then other people, not knowing how it's truly pronounced, look at it and said, oh, it must be Yun. And then, you know, after a while, it's just too difficult to correct people all the time.
Right.
So you just end up going with it.
It's probably like close enough.
So it's very common for the pronunciation of names to change significantly when they get translated into English. And we see this with so many people who have immigrated to the United States, where names are now pronounced so differently or even shortened from their original forms. We see this with a lot of names from people who came from Europe.
Right. I had a teacher in high school, Sanghee. He was Mr. Yates. And he told us one day that when his grandfather came to the U.S., his last name was Yatskovich. But when he got to Ellis Island, they said, we're going to shorten it to Yates. Okay, so he became Yates.
Yes, that's right. And that's a very common story. Well, as for these Korean names, we've already talked about the name Che, which is commonly spelled C-H-O-I and pronounced Choi in the United States.
Right.
But in Korean, it's really more like Che. And I've come to suspect only recently that it's probably because spelling it in Hangul is the CH sound, then the vowel for O, and then the vowel for E, which in Korean is pronounced Che. But if you have C-H-O-I in English, you pronounce it Choi.
Right. I have a Choi in my office, and she goes by Catherine Choi.
Exactly. One of my partners was last named was Choi. So that's a very common pronunciation in English, but it's actually incorrect in Korean. And then the name Park is really more like Park. And by the way, I've been watching The Morning Show on Apple TV, where one of the characters is named Stella Park. And she's played by the actress Greta Lee, who was so wonderful in Past Lives.
Oh my God. I haven't seen The Morning Show. That's the one with Jennifer Aniston?
Yes.
Ah, worth watching?
Yeah, I like it.
Huh.
But anyway, on the show, she actually spells her name correctly because it's B-A-K, which is actually closer to the true pronunciation in Korean.
Well, you know, my master's wife is Che Yunjang. And here in the U.S., she goes by Yeryeol Choi. And when I call her by her Korean name, she says it makes her very happy, doubly happy because I pronounce her last name Che. And I think the lesson for me, once again, is to look up the Hangul as fast as I can so that I can hopefully pronounce it properly. And Sanghee, there's another really common name. There's Kim. In English, it's K-I-M. So we pronounce it K, Kim, but it's really more like Kim, right? Like more like a soft G.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Because how would you say it?
Kim.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not quite K. It's softer than that.
It's softer than a K, but it's not like the G that we have in English.
That's right. That's why it's not romanized as Kim. It's Kim. Interesting.
So when you have these sounds that are transliterated from one language to another, they're approximate. They're not exactly the same.
Right. And especially if you are familiar with the Korean alphabet, you'll see that there are actually more vowels, and there are double consonants.
Right. And there are combinations of vowels that give you even more sounds.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks for that. Before we go, what are you watching? Sanghee, the last two episodes of Bon Appetit dropped this weekend, but I only had the opportunity to watch one of them. So I'm trying to stay off social media because I don't know if this is going to be a K-drama or a K-trauma.
No. Oh, no. Like,
I have no idea if the ending is going to wreck me. So I can't believe I didn't finish the last episode when it dropped on Sunday, but I was really busy. So hopefully like tonight or tomorrow.
Okay.
All right. So Bon Appetit almost done. And then the last two episodes of Tempest are dropping on Wednesday. My husband's son and I have already agreed to watch at least the first two episodes again after we watch the last two episodes, because we know that they will give us clues to what I know will be a very complicated ending, because episodes 6 and 7 were very complicated. I think you will agree.
So I'm watching Tempest as well, and I didn't realize that there are only two more episodes.
Yeah.
And then that's it? That's the end of the series?
I think so.
Okay.
Like 9 is kind of a random number, but that's what I read, that there's two more episodes.
Okay. Well, I'm also watching The Morning Show, which I mentioned before, because I'm in the middle of a knitting project, and it's something I can watch while knitting without having to watch the subtitles.
But don't you want to look up and see what the actors are doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do that too, but I don't have to like read the subtitles.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's interesting. Like I said, I'm watching Tempest with my husband and son, and you know, at first it was like, please watch this with me. I think you'll like it. And after a couple episodes, my younger son actually said, Mom, I thought that it would be challenging to watch while reading the subtitles, but he says it's been totally fine. So I'm thinking that maybe after this, they'll watch more K-dramas with me.
Oh, and what would you have them watch with you after Tempest?
I don't know. That's a really, really good question. Now, my husband watched Kingdom with me, which he liked, but I'm trying to figure out, like, what would my second son, MJ, what would he like? I don't know. So listeners, if you've got recommendations for a K-drama that a 15-year-old American boy would watch, send them to us on Instagram or post something on the blog.
Huh. Yeah. You know what? I think I'd have to know what his preferences are. I mean, I suppose we already know that he likes Tempest.
Yes. He's enjoying Tempest very much.
My impulse is always to say Mr. Queen, but I don't know that necessarily fits him.
I don't know. And I don't think he'd like Bon Appetit.
Right.
I don't know that he'd like Crash Landing either.
Yeah, maybe not a romance.
Yeah, exactly.
How about Healer?
Healer might be interesting. Yeah. Because it's a lot of action. And it's kind of an interesting story.
Right.
With a lot of twists and turns and backstories.
And the Ajuma, who is the...
the hacker. Ooh, yeah. That's a good idea. Well, you know what? Maybe I'll try Healer. By the way, I'm also watching, I watched another episode of Heavenly Ever After, and I am loving this show. It is charming.
Oh.
And just very, very sweet.
Oh, interesting. You know, I watched a couple episodes, and then I just didn't get into it. So it's interesting that you actually like it.
Well, I did the same thing. I dropped it. And then I thought, well, let me try it again because Ernabelle said it was really good. And I'm really, really glad. I think you should come back to it.
All right. Well, I'll definitely think about it.
Oh, and then just randomly, I don't know why, maybe because of Bon Appetit, Your Majesty, I decided to like rewatch an episode of Red Sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I am reminded how wonderful that show is. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that. The acting, the cinematography, and the music is just perfect. Red Sleeve is on Viki.
All right.
Listeners, next week, we will recap and analyze episode 13 of Extraordinary Attorney Wu. And I think, Sanghee, that we should talk about the filming locations for the show. Because you know how in many of the episodes, they're walking by that really long wall?
Oh, yes, right.
And you see that wall in a lot of shows. So I want to find out what that wall is.
Right. We know what that wall is.
Well, I can't remember what the wall is. So we can talk about the many familiar locations.
Okay.
And all the other places that, you know, maybe we'll recognize from other shows. I want to learn more about it. I'm Joanna.
And I'm Sanghee.
This show was edited by John Uriarte, our wonderful audio engineer. Graphics were done by Alex Pineda, and the website is maintained by MJ Kato.
Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a review in your favorite podcast site, and comment on each episode on our website, kdramachat.com. If you're on social media, please follow and message us on Instagram at kdramachat. And if you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. Bye.